Thank you for tuning into the VF One Show with VF and Vincenzo, the podcast that discusses all things business, marketing, politics, and government within the world of Formula One. If that's your thing, then you found the right place. So without further ado, it's lights out and away we go.
Welcome back to the VF One Show, where we talk off the grid topics about Formula One. I'm Vincenzo Landino, one of your co-hosts. On the other side of the line is my very, very intelligent and bright and more fun co-host, VF. How are you?
I'm better than Max Verstappen's trophy, that's for sure. Okay.
Oh, Lando. What is he doing?
You know what? Funny, Lando is just being Lando. And honestly, I think when you're Max and you have that many like trophies, that you're on the podium that many times, something is bound to get shaken up. Unfortunately, it was his trophy. Unfortunately, that was an expensive and very time-consuming trophy to create. Not the ideal situation, but again, it was an accident. It's fine. You know.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I love his little celebration.
I love that. The champagne volcano is what I've started calling it.
Yeah, do something different, you know, instead of just shaking it up. We've got a early slate for early part of the week. We've got another podcast dropping later this week. So this will be one of two episodes this week. Just be sure to keep your reminders on, or, you know, subscribe to us so you get alerts for when the episodes drop. Today, we'll be talking some Las Vegas GP updates. Some news came out about Las Vegas GP actually recently. Interesting. I think it's also a good conversation for us to have around rights and whatnot. Stefano Domenicali thinks or has said that the Brad Pitt film will have the DTS effect. He's fully committed to that being the new benchmark. Who broke the spending cap for 22? There's a lot of rumors about a few teams that have broken the spending cap. Hint, it's probably not who you think it is. And corruption around Singapore, and yeah, we'll get into that later on in the show. But let's lead off. Let's kick off with Las Vegas GP updates. There was an exclusive yesterday from... it was actually the New York Post, so take it for what it's worth. But it says that F1 is actually warned that obstructions like barricades, stands, and light stanchions could end up ruining the race for their customers. And they are prepared to, I guess, charge or block the clubs from, you know, having these clear views unless they pay millions in fees. I have heard from some folks that are in F1 and in the Vegas GP that this is pretty standard practice, though. So I wonder, like, how big of news this actually is, or is this just big news because it's happening in the U.S.? What do you...
Yeah, I'm hearing that for seating a 1500 or that, you know, exceeding that they are asking for a licensing fee of around 2.25 million.
Uh-huh.
And the New York Post source said they're literally shaking people down, saying they'll obstruct views unless we pay them. It seems insane that they're asking for money for a public event that is taking place in the streets. Okay, be that as it may. You know, it's one thing if you have an apartment in that area. I have a couple of friends who live slightly off the strip, but they have complete strip views. And they're going to be able to see a significant portion of the race literally from their living room, which is awesome. So, but then again, those people are paying a premium to live where they live to begin with. So, and they're also going to be pretty heavily inconvenienced for the whole week or 2 weeks leading up to it. So there's, I guess there's the payment there. But something I think was interesting about that was, I believe it was a hotel CEO or someone said something to the effect of Formula One is shaking us down. And I think that's kind of an ironic statement coming from a Las Vegas casino. I mean, so,
the actual, so what I did a little digging. What I heard was that F1's, what they reported that their communication to some of these clubs was about paying licensing fees if they're hosting people.
Yeah.
For the Grand Prix, which is standard procedure when other companies use the logo on, you know, on anything, any marketing materials for commercial gain without requests. So just because you're on the strip or just because you have a space that you can show, I guess not show the race, but you can host folks and you're trying to make money off of that using F1. Hey, come join us for the F1 race. I actually don't know if it's actually that biggest of a story. You know, to me, it's like, well, they're protecting their trademark.
Yeah.
You're using F1. You're hosting people for the race. Now, if you weren't using the F1 logo and tried to increase that brand awareness and you were just kind of business as usual, people can figure it out that they can also watch the race from your location. Okay, fine. Then you then continue doing what you're doing. I don't think F1 is in the wrong by doing it.
No.
At all.
I mean, essentially what it is F1 is saying you can't profit off of this without paying for it. And I think that's a pretty fair, I guess, thing to charge people for. So, you know, it's to your point, the commercial interest. Are you paying for the commercial rights to this? If you're not, then if you have no plans on using any Formula One branding or your hosts have no intention of saying, hey guys, because, you know, Las Vegas hosts, they have tons of contacts. They're always sending, you know, DMs to people on Instagram, sending mass texts to previous people that they've done business with saying, hey guys, we're just hosting business as usual this weekend, come by. And they're not upcharging for bottle services, for tables, for anything like that, knowing that people are already paying a premium. If it is just strictly business as usual, you're charging $700 for a bottle of vodka instead of $1,300 or $1,400 for a bottle of vodka, then fine. I guess maybe you could get away with that. But we all know that every single venue on the strip or even remotely close to the strip is going to be upcharging that week because they can.
Yeah. And I'll also say this. I mean, this is the challenge with having races in streets, you know, in cities where the reality is there's going to be views of these streets in places. This is definitely, I would say, a learning curve for both the city itself and F1. You know, what is the reaction to this coming? Here's the thing, is Vegas, do they see a value? Now we've talked about the economic impact that F1 has, you know, in Vegas or could have in Vegas and has had in other cities. But does Vegas actually see it as that big of a boost? You know, Vegas is becoming this sports capital of the United States with so many different sports coming to the city and, you know, if they don't value it as much, or if they don't think that this is as valuable as some of the other sports that they're bringing in, maybe they see this as kind of a elitist kind of thing going on, right? Oh, F1, you know, they're just, like you said, trying to shake us down. Oh, F1, they're, this is a racket. This is whatever. You know, so NASCAR recently had a race in Chicago. There were so many people watching in the windows of buildings, on rooftops, on Michigan Avenue. There were multiple spots where non-paying fans could stand and get a glimpse of the action. Now, the difference is, I don't know if those places were promoting that they were, come watch NASCAR using NASCAR's logos, right? It was probably just there, and if you showed up and you found a spot, great. That's also part of having a street race, right? That's part of That's part of it. You can't block every single vantage point. I don't know. I think this is interesting to see if this will, because listen, the clubs and the hotels run Vegas, right? Like that's where the bread is buttered. Without those, I mean, you don't really have much attraction. Now, these, you know, sports, that might change things. Maybe sports will become I don't want to say a bigger attraction in Vegas, but maybe sports will eat into that significantly. But people still go to Vegas for, you know, two major things, like the entertainment factor and the gambling, right? That's what it's there for. So yeah, it's already with the drama, and we're like 4 months out from
the race. Chicago, they put tarps up covering the fencing at the street level. So, I mean, it already happens in other cities, and they weren't making a massive deal about it. It didn't make like front page news.
I don't know what the tarps were there for. I don't know if those were more protection, just to keep things from going kind of like flying off the street. I didn't look too deeply into it. I just know that there was plenty of, you know, places that people could watch. And of course, if you're, you know, 70 stories up or something, of course you can stand over and watch. Or if you're 40 stories up, 10 stories up, and you're in a building, you can see the race. But
yeah, but were you marketing that race? Were you charging for that race? There's a big difference. So yeah, I mean, essentially what this is Formula One saying you can't profit off of something without paying for it. And that's fair. I think that people can say, oh, well, F1's just a bunch of gluttons. Well, remember the venue we're talking about. We're talking about Vegas here. This isn't like this is some crazy off the grid location where you always expect fair pricing. You can never expect fair pricing in Vegas to begin with. So, I mean, the whole concept, the whole comment of the shakedown, I think is kind of what killed their own argument against it.
Yeah, I mean, here's the other thing, too. Yeah. There's hotels, and this was said in the New York Post piece, like, there's hotels like Venetian and Wynn that are paying between $2 million to be official race sponsors.
Yeah.
Right? In a way, this is also protecting the sponsorship fees, because it's like, well, why would I pay $10 million to be an official race sponsor if I could just pay $2 million to F1 to say, you know, like, we're going to have a party here. I don't need to go and spend all this money to become an official race sponsor, right? Quote unquote official. And we'll just host people as normal. It'll be business as usual. We'll still profit off of using their logo. We'll pay them a small fee. I say small fee, but $2 million instead of $10 million and call it a day. So I do understand from the brand perspective, you know, you have to protect that as a sponsor. Yeah. You know, why would someone want to pay a sponsorship if you're going to just allow all of these other venues and locations to, you know, take advantage of what I'm paying big dollars for, right? Yeah. Me, the sponsor, I'm paying big dollars to be on that. You down the street who just decided to hire a graphic designer and put a F1 logo on a thing and say, you know, bubble bath party, rooftop, F1 race, like that's not right. So I do see kind of both sides of it. I think it's what is happening though is because there's so much confusion around all of this information, and now like you said, some people are calling it shaking down and racketeering and all this stuff, you know, throwing these big heavy words out there. You've got so many people now that are like just trashing, you know, F1 and trashing the race and trashing this whole thing. And that's not good. You know, that's where it's like, okay, we've got to figure out the messaging here, because, you know, if people are just going to be up in arms about this, if people are going to complain about it now, is that going to affect the dollars coming in? Probably not. It's going to be a lot of people complaining on Twitter or X, whatever the hell we're calling it these days. And that'll be, you know, that'll be an interesting PR issue that the Vegas folks will have to handle.
But the thing is,
yeah,
these venues, whether it's a restaurant or a smaller casino or something, they're going to be profiting anyway. I know hotels in Austin that are by the airport, like shit hotels that charge, like for a standard night, they would maybe charge $70. They're charging $500-$600 a night because they can. It's absurd, but they can. So here's the thing. For an entire week, you are going to have people from all over the world going to Vegas to watch a race. You have an entire week of opportunities to make a significant amount of money based on the fact that there is going to be a significant boost in tourism. And there's going to be a significant boost in tourism on the strip itself, because most people aren't, they're not going to rent cars. They're not going to Uber out to different places. They're going to stay on the strip. So you have a whole week to make however much money you can. And I think it's worth the investment if you are on the strip to be able to double, triple down on that and actually be able to have your own parties. So yeah, they're trying to skirt paying for things, but it's like, would you air a pay-per-view without paying for a pay-per-view? No. So, I mean, I guess you could if somebody streamed it, but you know, like there's always ways around something. But again, I just think that to protect the, for F1 to protect its brand, it has to go to these levels. And again, it's not like these restaurants, bars, et cetera, aren't going to be making a significant amount of money that week. So,
well, and it's interesting you brought up streaming like a pay-per-view, because I remember with like Sunday ticket for DirecTV, if you go to a bar and they have DirecTV or they have the Sunday ticket for NFL football, they can't just have like a regular person's account and start streaming games on all the TVs. They have to have a special, you know, bar license. So they pay big money to be able to show those games and leverage any marketing material that they want to use on social or flyers or whatever they do to promote that, hey, we have, you know, all the games available. So I kind of see this as a very similar situation.
Yeah.
I don't think F1 is wrong for asking for that at all. I'm just curious to see how it's all going down. Obviously, the, you know, one side is going to say one thing and the other side is going to say another, and somewhere in the middle is the truth, right?
Yeah.
With how this all went down. I'd be very curious to see as this story progresses, if anything changes. And we'll probably, you know, by later in the week's episode, we'll probably have some more answers. But yeah, interesting. So Stefano Domenicali, he has made a comment, or he said that the new Brad Pitt film is going to have a DTS effect, Drive to Survive effect, on the sport. Hard pause there for effect.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about what he's saying, because look, we know that at the British Grand Prix, that film was given unprecedented access. They had a pit garage. They had cars on track on the grid. They had a hospitality unit. There was a storage building that they were allowed to store things in. They had a modified F2 car with the assistance of Mercedes, right? That was allowed to run on track. You know, they had filming access to the drivers. I mean, you had Brad Pitt and the other guy, Damson Idris, standing next to Max Verstappen. Like, I think that and also the fact that Lewis Hamilton is a producer. So I think Domenicali has previously said that it adds to the credibility of just having Lewis involved in production, adds to the credibility, because it kind of doubles down on the realities of Formula One. They want it to be as close to the truth, as accurate as possible, what actually goes down in F1. But obviously, being a fiction story, there's going to be a lot of things that are heavily embellished in this, because how can you create something fiction that isn't embellished? But yeah, I I don't know that it's going to have that unprecedented effect the DTS brought to the sport, because it was in a different time. You remember it was during COVID, it was during lockdown. I think that's when a lot of people discovered DTS because there was nothing else to watch. Suddenly they become massive F1 fans. I think we have seen the effects that marketing, good marketing, can have. We've seen it with Barbie. We've seen it with, what's the other film? Oppenheimer. Yeah. We have seen the significant effects that marketing can have on promoting these films. So suddenly you've got Barbie mania happening. Suddenly everyone is wearing hot pink. Every brand wants to be involved with Barbie all of a sudden. So I know that there's potential for that to happen. But we are in a very different time. But perhaps where this is going to reach a different audience is that you have a lot of people who are Brad Pitt fans. Maybe they're fans of, God, what was the movie he made? The Ocean series? So he has, Fight Club, right? He has a huge audience already of fans that could watch this just because it's Brad Pitt. So I do see where they could possibly reach into several different fan bases that maybe don't have access to F1. They don't really care about F1. Maybe they're an older generation who loves Brad Pitt. So I see that, but I'm not sure if it's going to have massive DTS effect. Might come close.
Yeah, I am kind of torn. I think it's taking advantage of the boom, whereas Drive to Survive created the boom. So to say that they're equal is really tough because, and I'm probably going to sound like I'm fanboying DTS for a second, but what Drive to Survive did, regardless of if you like it or not, that's not the point. Just as a piece of branded content and as a tool to raise awareness around a sport, a series, there's nothing else like it. Nothing has existed like that. Yeah. Or what it's done is incredible. I mean, other sports are trying to follow suit. A movie with Brad Pitt, which is great. I love Brad Pitt, but I don't know. Is he still in his prime acting era? It's not exactly like he's Tom Cruise creating like these epic films late. And I could be totally wrong. Maybe he has created something lately that has been mind-blowing. So I'm sorry, Brad Pitt fans. But I'm just trying to think, like, is this film, which the storyline sounds just like films we've seen in the past.
Yeah.
Aging former star comes back to mentor younger, kind of maybe arrogant or, whatever, hotshot. I mean, literally the film Driven is the exact same storyline with Sylvester Stallone. Now, granted, the movie's terrible, but it was also like that early 2000s, late 90s type filming. So there's also a little bit of that going on with it, but
yeah.
I don't know. The storyline doesn't feel like it's brand new. It's nothing riveting. Yes, you're going to get unprecedented access, and you're going to get a lot of people that are going to watch. But I think those people are probably watching because of Drive to Survive. It's not like you're going to suddenly bring in. I just don't see this thing being some blockbuster. You mentioned Barbie and Oppenheimer. Those films, I saw Oppenheimer last night at a local cinema. Community cinema, two screen theater, real old school type place. It was packed, absolutely packed. People were like, gripping on to every word that was being said. Barbie, same thing, massive marketing budget. You see pink everywhere. The lines for Barbie, same thing. Is this going to be one of those films?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't see it. To me, I think you're going to tap a fan base that's already there. Mm. Like, I don't care that Brad Pitt's in the film. I only care about it because it's a racing film, right?
But there's also there's nothing controversial about it. With Barbie, it's super controversial because you have so many people making political takes from this. Oh, this is sure. this is anti-man. This is, you have so many different narratives coming from Barbie right now that, and I don't really watch movies, I'll be fully honest. So I'm not sure what's being said about Oppenheimer, but is there going to be controversy behind this film? Like, because that is what's going to get people talking. That's what unfortunately gets people going in this era. So
yeah, no, I don't see it, and I don't know that we need it. Like, we don't need drama. Not drama, but we don't need that for, like, it just doesn't need it. We don't need it for F1. That's what I'm kind of getting at.
There's too much drama as it is. We're good.
Yeah. So, that, you know, again, a DTS effect is a very strong phrase to use. It's also a very strong effect that I don't think can be replicated because of what it actually did.
Yeah.
And if we don't look at the effect that Drive to Survive had on the sport as a whole, and not even just the sport, on kind of the entire motorsport world, right? Because now everybody in motorsport is trying to do this. This film is not going to make that impact. Maybe I'm wrong, but we'll find out in 2024 when it comes out. I don't think it's going to be that big a deal.
To be fair, though, I think Domenicali, he's trying to hype up the film because it's involving F1. And that's fantastic marketing for the sport, for the drivers, et cetera. So, I mean, maybe he's just trying to play his part in hyping a film up because he knows that they serve to at least have some levels of profit or interest from that. So maybe that's where he's going with that. Who knows?
Spending cap. We're talking about drama. Spending cap. There's apparently three teams that are over the cap.
Who do you think those three teams are?
I thought there was reports that it was Mercedes, Aston Martin, and Red Bull.
Why am I not surprised?
I need to find the actual report again. I got to find a report. This is all all these people are speculating. I don't believe any of it, right? Like, I want to say those are the three that I read.
Yeah. I mean, I think that those three are, maybe considering Red Bull is still top dog, Mercedes has done a complete, I think, turnaround from the car that we had at the beginning of the season, the car now. And a lot of that development was obviously made last year. So, but again, Mercedes had such a shit car last year. So I'm not sure what else they could have done to, I mean, Mercedes with a $500 million budget, that car would have been a rocket by the end of the season. Like, they would be winning races right now. But again, because they had such a shit car, because they committed to the no pod at the beginning of the season, and then they switched over to the W14B, I'm not sure that I necessarily buy that, because, hey, if you're considering that Red Bull only got a 10% reduction in the wind tunnel and a $7 million fine, that's not much of a deterrent for teams to want to break the cap. So I'm not sure if I necessarily believe that it's Mercedes. It could be Mercedes. It is Mercedes after all. But I would say more definitely Aston Martin is in there. I would probably put Red Bull in there because, again, Red Bull got off with a slap on the wrist. What's $7 million to Red Bull, you know? I'm not sure about the other one, though. Part of me thinks it's kind of a lower end of the spectrum team. Or like a middle of the road, maybe a McLaren, because we've seen the car from last year to this year. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. McLaren's growth seems kind of, I don't want to say natural, but it seems like a progression of a team that's like, we've figured it out.
Yeah.
As opposed to we're great. Now, again, breaking the cost cap, like, I think there's also a little bit of nuance there too, because as we found out with Red Bull last year, it's like, okay, it was £7 million over whatever it might, you know, it might have been, but it was coming from this, not this. But now you've got, like, so even Lewis made a comment about you know, what happened to Red Bull's DRS. He thinks that their DRS is not as powerful as it was. I saw there was some kind of rumor that, like, did the FIA low-key, like, dock Red Bull without letting anyone know and, like, tell them, hey, you need to stop doing so, whatever you're doing with your DRS. There was also, I believe there was something around, or Lewis, was it Lewis again who made this comment? I think he made the comment that I just made. That was it. I'm trying to scroll back and figure out what all the other comments were. There was a lot of stuff happening this past weekend in the paddock, from what I heard. I mean, there was tons of talk about, you know, broken car. Oh, that's what it was. There was talk about, is, and I forgot who said this exactly, but is Helmut Marko, how does he not go against the Red Bull cap? He's at every race. He's there on the pit wall or in the paddock constantly with Red Bull. He doesn't count against the cap because he's some sort of, like, consultant. And I saw somebody on Twitter make the comment, well, they said, define Red Bull, which I thought was actually really interesting, because we talk about teams like Red Bull and Ferrari and Aston Martin. We talk about them just by their name, but their full names, you know, Aston Martin, Cognizant, Aramco, F1 team, right? There's a full name to that, because Aston Martin is a car brand. A separate entity is the F1 team. Same thing with Mercedes, same thing with Red Bull, same thing with, most of the teams. They are separate entities from their bigger, you know, the manufacturer that they're kind of branded to. And I thought it was interesting to say that, like, define Red Bull. Because if a consultant for Red Bull as a whole, because Red Bull is involved in tons of different motorsport, how does that change the way his salary, you know, is paid? And are they pushing the envelope, which, you know, maybe it's not breaking the rule, or it obviously isn't. Are they just pushing the envelope because have they found a creative way to get around it, right?
Yeah.
So there's, like, all these rumors swirling around. I did see that, like, FIA is saying we're not rushing a cost cap investigation right now, which, of course, it's like, okay, we're not going to rush into it. Okay, that's great, but what is the point of these regulations if you're not going to actually, you know, look them up, or not look them up, adhere to them? And yeah. This is now the era we've entered with F1. We've entered this, you know, regulation world where it's like, oh, they're breaking this regulation. Oh, the wing opens, you know. And now I get certain things, right? Technical regulations on the track, fine. You wanna nitpick those? Great. Go ahead and play that game. That game's been played forever in F1, right?
Yeah.
Oh, his wing does this. This is flexi. Oh, they're doing something with the fuel. Fine. You know what? That doesn't even bother me at all. But now that this has turned into, like, an accounting thing, mm-hmm. that's where it's like, can we please, like.
And a big thing to consider last year was almost every team on the grid was complaining about inflation and how this is going to affect their budget.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so when you actually maybe take a look at the FIA said that they're going to be releasing financial reports in August. Who knows if that's going to happen. But I'm curious to see just how much inflation, just what effect inflation had on these budgets, because the fact that you have almost, it was kind of like you had all of the top teams, even the middle teams, saying that we need to expand the cap to account for inflation. But then you had the lower end spectrum teams that said absolutely not, because they're having a hard time hitting the cap to begin with. So, you know, and then they say, well, you should manage your accounting better. Well, how do you manage accounting during an global economic crisis? It's a lot harder to do. So I'm not sure maybe that had an effect on it. But one thing I think is interesting is that now Domenicali, he says that the punishments should be sporting and not financial. So again, like Red Bull's biggest penalty last year was financial.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, there's Ross Braun. If you remember this last year too, Ross Braun had said, this is before any penalties came out or any, you know, infractions came out. He was like, anybody that breaks the cap, I got to look it up actually, because now I want to read it. I think in 2019, he actually said this. And he said, so this is as they introduced the cost cap. He said something like, any team who breached the cost cap should be disqualified from the championship. The financial regulations represent a drastic change in the history of F1. And he went on to say something like, these regulations have teeth. These aren't just like there for, you know, just for show. They are an essential step for the sport. So like, how do you say that and then not truly follow through? Like, how does the FIA act super lax? Like, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to rush into completing this, or we're not really going to penalize teams that have broke this rule. Now, listen, do I think that $7 million would have, you know, stopped Red Bull from winning the championship last year? Absolutely not. No.
No.
I don't. But the rule is the rule, right? And this holds true for anybody that does it. You break the rule, and they claim that there's a penalty for it. You know, the penalty should be predetermined. It's you get a yellow card in soccer, you get a red card in soccer, you get penalty in NFL football for, you know, breaking a rule. The rule is the rule. You know what the penalty is. It's a 10-yard for holding. It's a yellow card for, dangerous play. It's a rule. So yeah. How do we look at a financial regulation and not just have a chart that says, okay, rule was broken, first time infraction, here's the penalty.
Yeah.
Here's where's that?
To Braun's point, though, if Red Bull was disqualified, say Red Bull's disqualified again this year because of what they found, et cetera, et cetera. Could F1 even exist at this point without Red Bull, without Mercedes, without all of those teams? Because you disqualify them enough, you threaten disqualification. I mean, when you think about how much revenue these teams bring Formula One, would these teams just say, fuck it, I'm done. I don't want to be a part of this. I mean, we've talked about this several months ago. Would there ever be a point where would teams splinter off from F1, from the FIA? Would they start their own?
No, I don't think that. I don't think that's the issue. I don't think that's what can be looked, you know, should be taken from that. I think it's more like, if you're not going to penalize, then why not just break the cap? Why not just go ahead and like, or push the limit to the cap? And then just claim that, hey, we interpreted it a different way, which is what teams do anyway, right? Like they do that with even technical regulations. I mean, Adrian Newey wrote this in his book. I mean, you talk to any engineer, this is what they say. Like they literally look at their regulations and say, how do we interpret these in a way that it, like, how do we develop the car in ways that it doesn't specifically tell us we can't? Right. Yeah. In the regulations or whatnot. So, I mean, that's all it becomes, is a game of, well, this is not how we interpreted it. I think that you end up having a situation where more teams are going to say, yeah, whatever, because what's the worst that's going to happen? We're going to have to pay a fine. And then for F1 or the FIA to then try to enforce a different type of penalty, you know, let's just say Mercedes or McLaren or Aston Martin or any of these teams go, anyone but Red Bull, because Red Bull's already been penalized, right? So if they break it again, that Red Bull has a harder time defending their case, right? No matter what, you can't, it's like, oh, we broke it again. Okay, well, now the penalty has to be harsher. But let's just say other first-time offenders, you know, whatever, Ferrari, yeah, breaks anybody. They can literally argue the same thing. Well, you just gave them this penalty, so you can't give us a larger penalty than that.
Right? Yeah.
It's just, so now it's just games. It's more accounting games. It's more.
Yeah. Well, the interpretation.
Political games.
The interpretation component is why the FIA is doubling down on investigating non-F1 activity. They're trying to make sure that teams aren't circumventing the cap. But again, it's like, I can think of several ways that teams could even go around that. Like you just said with Red Bull, what is Red Bull? Define Red Bull. When you were talking about Helmut Marko's pay. So how does the FIA control all of this? They can't. So I don't know where they go from here. I think that, you know, if a team goes over, minor breach over, and they get any penalty harsher than Red Bull, I mean, call in the lawyers, because that's inevitably what's going to happen. I don't know. I think they're creating much bigger problems for themselves with this than necessary. I mean, they need to create an actual punishment schedule. Send them out to the teams. This is just so you're aware. And again, we talk about, you know, preemptive strategy. The FIA doesn't seem to do that. So they need to establish that right now. If there's a minor overspend, XYZ, this is what the penalties are going to be. There's no workaround from this. If we find that you have broken the cap in any other way by, you know, through circumvention, non-F1 activity, then this is what the penalties are going to be for that. And they need to just put it down on the books once and for all, because this is just, there's too much they're not being transparent about. And it's really frustrating as fans, because, you know, a lot of people, they can't help but think that there's some sort of collusion happening behind the scenes that's preventing some teams from this. So if you want to quell those conspiracy theories, again, this is how you do it. You establish it. This is black and white. This is where we go from here.
I'm with you. I think there's a lot to be, they're leaving a lot to be interpreted by teams, where they need to just be the authority on it. And without taking an actual authoritative stance or disciplining in a way, you know, upholding the actual rules that they have in place, is it's just a free for all. And this will be a conversation every season from now until they fix it. Mm-hmm. Because we're always going to have a team that's going to outperform, and people are going to think they're cheating, and maybe they are cheating. And the reality is, cheating or not, because of what happened last season, where they were lightly punished for something, the FIA has already proven that they're not really serious about it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's almost like you have to think that they went into this going, no one's going to break these rules. We don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. Well, it's like that Succession quote, you aren't serious people. That's just what I'm thinking of right now.
Yeah.
They're being dressed
down. You aren't serious people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, 100%. We'll see what happens.
Speaking of corruption, there's a corruption probe that is happening right now in Singapore. Ong Beng Seng is a businessman, hotel tycoon, but he's best known for bringing the Grand Prix to Singapore. So he's being looked at. And then, you know, a little bit more about the story. I'll let you kind of jump in on this one. What do you know? What's going on? Why does this affect the GP? Could it affect GP? Like, what's the deal there?
So all I know right now is that it's an open investigation. This happened early July, and corruption cases for ministers are rare. I think they said that the reason for that is because they're paid extremely well. I think it's close to the equivalent of $800,000, $900,000, $1 million that they get paid, USD equivalent, that they get paid per year. So they pay their ministers extremely well in order to try and deter them from getting involved in any corrupt activity. So I think this has been pretty effective because the last case of corruption was in 1986. So that speaks pretty highly of this program that they have. So right now they're being very, the details on why they were arrested are very vague. They haven't been formally charged with anything. So that's interesting. And I know they're out on bail. I know that Beng Tseng is allowed to travel. And yeah, he was credited for bringing F1 to Singapore. He's also a shareholder. But the thing I think is interesting is, you know, we ask, what does this mean for the Singapore Grand Prix? A lot of people have said, well, my gosh, is it going to be canceled? You know, right now it means absolutely nothing. Officials for the race, they haven't commented about the arrest. They haven't said how it will affect the Grand Prix. And one thing that people have to consider in all of this is that the Singapore Grand Prix has generated over $1.5 billion for the local economy. And I think it's on the schedule through what, 2028, I believe. So that's a lot more money that they're going to be bringing into that local economy. So I don't expect any official statements to come from the Grand Prix. I don't expect any official statements to come from the local government talking about how this corruption could potentially affect the Grand Prix, because they don't want to lose that money. They do not want to lose that tourism. And every person I know who has been to the Singapore Grand Prix say it is one of the best races on the calendar, even though they have to deal with the humidity because the cities are extremely clean. Everyone is nice. And they just love going there. It's just a beautiful place. And so I don't see them commenting on this because I don't think they want to involve the Grand Prix. So, you know, to answer more of a complicated question, this means absolutely nothing right now. And I don't think the Grand Prix is going to be affected by this at all. He might be removed from any sort of leadership position while this is ongoing. But again, he's a shareholder. So unless they tell him, like, you need to sell your shares, you know, he's still going to be involved in this.
So if we go a little bit deeper, Bernie Ecclestone's tax fraud case, because of that situation, his accounts were submitted to as court evidence. And apparently someone had spotted an expense line for the VIP lounge. And so even though these folks probably have zero involvement with, you know, Bernie Ecclestone, it's like, it's just, it's probably, it could be potentially,
yeah,
part of that situation. So
right now we have no evidence. Like, they haven't provided anyone with anything to give us even a baseline for how we can approach this. So that's why I think that the officials for the Grand Prix are being so quiet about this. They don't want to comment either way.
Yeah, and they shouldn't. So, they shouldn't. Because exactly. it shouldn't affect the GP at all. And, you know, Beng Tseng did back in 2007. I mean, he dealt with Ecclestone on getting this GP there. But I don't see it as an issue at all. I don't think it's one of those things where we don't have to worry about a GP getting canceled over this.
Yeah. I think we can calm down from that, guys. It's fine.
But it'll be a fun story to follow, just to see if, you know, Bernie's web of lies continues to affect other, you know, business folks that could be affected, you know, by his tax issues and, like, just kind of the shady stuff he was involved with.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
That's going to bring us to a close on this show today. Show number one of the week. We're going to be back later on this week. Listen for that. We're going to talk a little bit about 2026 regulations. There was some, there's some stuff going around. There's also some rumors going around about the 2026 power and engine regulations. I want to talk a little bit about that. And nothing's been finalized, but there's a lot of rumors. It is almost silly season. Let's consider it silly season.
Oh, it's been silly season.
It's very silly season. And with, you know, with silly season in full effect, we're just going to get tons of rumors over the next month. And a a lot of speculation that maybe there will be a ton of stuff that happens. And this is the show that you need to listen to be up to date on all things Formula One, off the grid, politics, business of F1, all that good stuff. Be sure to rate and review the show on your favorite podcast player. 5 stars, please. You can also tweet at us or X at us now. I don't know what we're calling it anymore, but yeah, I'm Vincenzo Landino on Twitter. She is the VF Castro. Mm-hmm. Come over there, converse with us, talk to us. If there's anything you want to hear on the show or if you have questions for the show, drop them over there because that's the best place for them. Any final parting words, V?
No, I'm good. You?
No. We'll leave it for the next show this week. On that note, I'll see you around.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into the VF1 show. If you liked it, please don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And for previews of next week's show, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the VF Castro and Vincenzo Landino.